We'll hear arguments first this morning in Michigan against Tyler and Tompkins. Mr. Butler, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
This arson case presents the questions of when and to what extent a warrant is to be required for post-fire and, by analogy, other post-disaster investigations, and of which evidence is admissible against, in particular, arsonists who burn their own buildings. The case arises out of facts which, for the most part, are typical of any arson-for-profit case, with two small exceptions which we plan to elaborate upon later in argument. In relating the facts and in attempting to justify warrantless post-fire searches in general, as well as the searches which occurred in particular in this case, we have four principal themes. The first is that the public interest in a post-disaster or post-fire search is significantly greater than the public interest in any inspection of the type touched upon in, or dealt with in Camara, Say, and Secretary of State against Barlow. The second theme is that the privacy interests at issue, as well as the potential for abuse, are very minimal, primarily because of the extensive damage that has taken place, the extent of the already lawful intrusion, and because of the nature of the search for the cause or origin of the fire. Third, we contend that a warrant in circumstances like these, whether administrative or criminal, will provide no protection in the great majority of cases, very little protection in a very limited class of cases. Fourth, our fourth theme is that of fire investigation. There are certain costs in fire investigation and in public safety to requiring any kind of administrative search warrant. The general interest in the search, in conducting a search of this type, are several. The cause itself must be determined first as some type of exigent circumstance. This is a theme which the Michigan Supreme Court seemed not to acknowledge. Now, we grant that they did say if there are exigent circumstances, the possibility of danger of evidence burning, of danger to the firemen conducting the investigation, danger of water damage to the evidence, that then that will excuse a search that takes place at that time. But we think they should have concluded that until the cause is determined, there should be a presumption that there is an exigent circumstance.
In the local law applicable here, is every fire subject to some investigation as to cause?
There is a local statute which requires the local fire marshal to determine, conduct a physical investigation to determine the cause or origin of the fire, and it states that he may enter without warrant any premises for making that determination.
Well, now the statute says, the state statute says that the director or any officer is authorized to investigate and inquire. It doesn't direct him to.
If not that specific statute, it's clear that under the Fire Prevention Act, he does have the duty to determine the cause or origin of all fires that result in property damage or death.
And did you say in answer to the question of the Chief Justice that he does, in fact, investigate the cause or origin of every single fire, large and small?
The statute reads where there is injury or death or damage to property. I mean, he would have to investigate any fire that is called to his attention, very small fires that he would never hear of, of course.
Because the statute is simply an authorizing statute. It's not a directory statute. But you say that in practice he is considered to be under a duty to do it?
Yes, sir.
And does do it?
Yes, he does, Your Honor.
In every case where there's a loss of life or damage to property? There's always going to be some damage to property, isn't there?
That is brought to his attention. Now, if it's a very small fire that, I mean, of course, that is never reported to any fire department. No, he doesn't do that. But
well, I'm assuming it's been reported to the fire department.
But he's obliged to.
There's always damage to property in a fire, isn't there?
Not always to real property. Yes.
Well, it doesn't say real property. It's pretty hard to damage real property in a fire.
Well, I'm considering real property to be buildings as well. Mm-hmm. That's what I meant by that term.
Didn't the Michigan court construe the state statute?
We believe that he construed the state statute to require a warrant only to make it constitutional under the Fourth Amendment. But they did read a warrant requirement into that statute. We claim that it makes very little sense to do that because it's certainly not the intent of the legislature, because they surely should be presumed to know that any fire investigator can enter a building with a warrant. So by very clear implication, it would seem to, the statute on its face would seem to allow warrantless searches. That is, the court said the statute didn't speak to the question.
But aren't we bound by the Michigan construction?
I don't believe...
To the extent that's relevant to this case.
I don't believe you'd be bound by it if their construction depended upon an erroneous view only of the Fourth Amendment. If it depended upon any other view of Michigan law, then the court would be bound by it.
Isn't the only reason the case is here is because they have construed the federal Constitution?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
Mr. Butler, did I correctly understand your view is that the exigent circumstances exception should survive until the cause of the fire is determined?
Precisely, Your Honor.
Even if it might take a year or two?
No,
if the building has been reconstructed, would it still survive that long?
Not if the owner or occupant had somehow retaken over the premises, had moved something back in, or in any other way it indicated that he's either living in them or using it as an operational
What
business.
If he just locks the premises and secures them against entry by third parties?
A lot of that would depend upon precisely when he did that. We contend the fire
department... Would that ever terminate the exigency exception?
Yes, it certainly would at some point.
Didn't he do that in this case?
No, in this case, the proprietor of the premises was out of state for about 7 days after the fire, until about 7 days after
the
fire.
But at the time of the search where they found the fuse and the glass or whatever it was, some 22 or 3 days later, the premises were locked then, weren't they?
They were locked and sealed by the fire department.
No, why didn't that terminate the exigency then?
It clearly did. At that search, by the time of that search, the exigency was terminated.
Well, then, under your view of the law, the search was improper, if I understand you.
No, Your Honor. We believe there's an additional justification for that search. We're speaking now primarily of the search that occurred the morning following the fire.
Yes, but some of the evidence that was excluded, I mean, it was received over objection, was found on January 22nd or whatever date it was, about 3 or 4 weeks later.
Right, February.
And don't you have to sustain that search in order to sustain the conviction?
We have to sustain that search, yes, Your Honor, but we don't believe we have to sustain it under the exigent circumstance exception to the warrant requirement.
Who put the lock on the door?
The fire department, perhaps in conjunction with the
police
department.
It was sealed pending the completion of the investigation, as I read the record. Is that correct? The building was sealed by a lock put on it by the fire marshal, both to protect the property and... During the course of his investigation, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. The fire was put out at approximately 4 a.m. on January 22nd, at which time the fire department boarded up all the windows and put their own locks and chains on all the doors, and then re-entered at 8 o'clock the next morning and found what we agree was indeed the cause of the fire by that time. The Michigan Supreme Court held that in the course of putting out the fire between midnight and approximately 4 a.m. on January 22nd, that the finding only of two plastic bottles, one partially filled with gasoline, was itself the cause of the fire, and that enabled them, that gave them enough probable cause to obtain a search warrant. We're contending that...
Mr. Butler, sir. I want to be sure. Are there not three pieces of evidence here? The first, what they picked up at the time of the fire, that's a plastic container and the like.
Yes, Your Honor.
And there was no objection to its admission, as I recall.
At least it was not challenged in the court below nor here.
The second piece was what was discovered at the daylight entry the very next day.
Yes,
and,
Your Honor.
And that was admitted over objection and is at issue here.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then the third one, am I correct, was 2 or 3 weeks later.
About three or four weeks later, there was a reentry. The reason for the reentry was that the photographs taken by an arson investigator were lost in the mail. He apparently reentered to retake some more photographs, and while doing that, found a piece of fuse and pieces of glass and debris. And those items were admitted over.
But in any event, we have these three levels of evidence, two of which are under challenge at this point.
That's correct, Your Honor. However, in order to make this case retriable, under the opinion of the Michigan Supreme Court, really there were other entries into the building, and the principles of the opinion below would not allow, for example, oral testimony by an arson investigator who went in 4 days after the fire. had he taken photographs or found physical evidence, it's clear that they would have been challenged.
When you talk about a warrant requirement as imposed by the Michigan Supreme Court here, what inquiry would the magistrate make in order to justify the issuance of a warrant?
The only possible inquiry which we can imagine is simply whether or not a fire occurred. It seems that if an administrative search warrant is to be allowed, is to be required to re-enter and determine the cause or origin of the fire, all that we should have to be able to show is that a fire occurred.
Well, couldn't you show that there were two cans of gasoline sitting there?
Well, we could show that a fire occurred just by the condition of the building. I mean, that is what would say that a fire occurred. As opposed
well, couldn't
to that.
You show that? I mean, you don't have gasoline sitting around for fumigation purposes, do you?
I'm not sure if Your Honor is suggesting that we need a criminal warrant. If that's the case, then there's a close question of whether those two bottles of gasoline are sufficient to prove that.
I'm talking about any kind of warrant.
Okay, we think if just an administrative warrant is required to determine the cause or origin of the fire, then
you
the only...
You keep saying re-entry.
Right.
Don't you mean search? Are you evading the word search?
No, we're not. We've used it repeatedly throughout the brief, and
yeah, well,
I stand
here. Labor. You've been saying entry every time. You keep saying entry.
Well, there is the entry is one intrusion, and what they do inside is
but
is
didn't they
something
search
else.
When they went in?
Yes, they did, Your Honor.
Each time?
Yes, they did. They searched for the
so
cause
when you
or
say entry, you mean search?
Yes, Your Honor. Entry and search.
Well, would you be satisfied with the rule that that you could enter the building any time you wanted to after a fire to hunt for evidence in the cause, but that nothing you found could be admitted in evidence in a criminal prosecution unless you had a warrant?
No, we'd be very dissatisfied with a rule like that, Your Honor. That
you really want to. You really want gathering evidence, aren't you? For, in,
it,
for
it's doing
it's
both.
A criminal investigation, among other things.
Among other things, exactly, Your Honor. It,
now,
it
why
has,
is this? Why is this arson crime any different than any other crime? In terms of your ability to enter property to find evidence?
We think it's different because there's a legitimate need to enter the property anyway to make a valid civil inspection and search for the cause of the fire. Another respect in which it's different is
well,
that...
Well, then, I know, but you could serve that end by agreeing not to use the evidence in a criminal prosecution unless you had a warrant.
That would be the most perverse rule imaginable, Your Honor, because that would say... It's all right to make these searches because there's a public interest for them, but we'll make one exception and give a benefit only to arsonists and say that the evidence can't be
no,
used.
No, but you're saying that only arsonists can't object to entry to property without a warrant.
We're saying that arsonists are in a special class in that the way they have treated their own property suggests they have no protectable interest or no interest remaining protected by the Fourth Amendment. By nearly any test except one which requires total abandonment of any property interests.
Like a man who shoots his children? He's done something pretty bad. But you can't enter his house and search his property without a warrant just to find evidence of the crime.
That's true, Your Honor. We're not contending that he somehow, as punishment for his crime, loses a right. We would make the same analysis if arson for profit were not a crime. Our point is that the way he treats his own property, the actions which make up the crime of arson, also speak to what expectation he has in his own premises, and they say that he has none.
So to extend my brother White's question, if a man shoots and kills four people in a place, you can't come in and investigate that. But if he burns them up, you can.
If police hear gunshots in a building, I think they can usually go in without a warrant. Just because...
No, this had a silencer, just to make it tough.
Just because a crime has been committed in a building does not waive any kind of privacy or protection
except
that one
arson.
Expects in that building.
Except arson.
Except arson of your own building. We think that the deliberate destruction of someone's own property is so inconsistent with any notion of how the law is supposed to protect private property that in itself should be sufficient to waive at least temporarily any Fourth Amendment protection in the arsonist's own building.
Mr. Butler, I'd like to go back to Justice Rehnquist's question. Just what does a magistrate do if you have to get a warrant? You go in and prove a fire took place and some damage was incurred, period. Isn't he automatically going to issue the warrant?
That's precisely our point, Your Honor. That needs no exercise
of
discretion.
Well, that's
only
on the assumption that you needn't show probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed.
Well,
of course, if you assume that, why, you've assumed the case away.
Okay. If we're speaking of administrative warrants, then you don't need probable cause to show that a crime
you're assuming the case away again.
Well, when the marshal begins, is he looking for a crime or is he looking for a cause of a fire?
He's looking for the cause of a fire, which
and
may...
Incidentally, he may then come to the conclusion later that it was self-inflicted, that is, that it was arson. But does it become a criminal investigation right at the outset?
Not at the outset. It can. The point is, once there is evidence of arson discovered, it becomes... Arson is still a cause of a fire, and as far as using fire experience as a yardstick to test the success of fire codes, that says that this was not a breakdown of the fire prevention system. This was deliberately caused. But at the same time, of course, it is evidence of a crime.
Well, can the medical examiner go into a house to find the cause of death?
Yes, he can immediately.
Well, I know, but without a warrant, 5 days later, can he? The door is locked. Can he break in and find evidence of what? What killed the person?
I would think in almost any circumstances, yes. Your Honor seems to be speaking of an exigent circumstance where a body is discovered that appears to have died of unnatural causes. You can't break into an occupied home.
Okay, does he need a warrant or doesn't he?
Your Honor, those facts are
so difficult. To enter a private house, a private property?
It would depend.
All he wants to find out is the cause of death. The only thing is that it may be very much great evidence of a crime.
It's very difficult to imagine circumstances that would arise where he would have notice somehow that there's a dead body that's been dead for 5 days, and yet it's in a completely locked house where someone is denying admission to the public.
No question that somebody's died. The body's in the morgue. But the medical examiner would like to get into somebody's house to find out what killed him.
No, clearly not, Your Honor. I misunderstood the question and thought the body was in the house.
Why can't he go in the house and find out the cause of death? That's all he wants to know.
He's supposed
to make out a death certificate. He doesn't know, so he'd like to go find out.
We're dealing with a fully occupied home or business that has all the traditional Fourth Amendment protection.
So if this person had locked when this fire was put out, had put his own locks on his premises... would there a warrant have to be obtained to get in?
Under most circumstances, we'd say yes. On the other hand,
about this circumstance, if he had locked the door, the fireman put the fire out, went away, and instead of the fire department putting locks, locking it up, he did.
We still contend that if we're going to look at how he treats the property, that is, by putting a lock on it, we should also look at what he's done to the property to bring it into that condition. He's deliberately destroyed it. He's attempted to sell it back to the insurance company involuntarily, which indicates he doesn't want it anymore.
I don't think he's done anything yet. He hasn't been indicted yet.
Whenever the issue is raised in a suppression hearing or on appeal, the court will always have before it facts which indicate what he did. It is his guilt will be established to some legal degree. It's true that at the time they enter, they may not have evidence that the occupant burned it himself. That is true. We're saying...
But in this case, they had evidence. They had the two cans of gasoline.
That may be evidence of arson. I'm not sure it's evidence that he did it himself. It could have been a malicious fire.
It was evidence of arson.
We think that is very slim evidence of arson. We doubt that a warrant would ever issue simply upon a statement that two plastic bottles of gasoline were found in a burned building. That seems equally as consistent with an innocent fire as with arson.
Well, what was this building, manufacturing place?
No, Your Honor, it was a retail furniture store.
Well, what would they use gasoline for?
Cleaning. At the time, they just seemed to know that it was hydrocarbon or some kind of flammable liquid. They did smell gasoline in the building. Those seem to be the only facts which indicated that the fire was arson.
Mr. Butler, does the record tell us, at the time of the search on February 16th, the building was locked, as I understand it, who had keys to the building at that time? Just the fire people, or did the...
I believe it's clear that just the fire and or the police officials had keys to the building. At that time, Respondent Tyler had returned from out of state on, I believe, January 29th. That's when he visited the premises. And nothing in the record indicates that he had a key to it.
It's
nothing that I was able to find.
Do you distinguish at all between business premises and a home for purposes of your argument?
We haven't in the briefs. No, we don't, Your Honor. We would, of course, concede that if there had been any fire in a home and the people are still living there, or the damage was not extensive, that, yes, a warrant should be obtained there.
Did you hear the argument in the OSHA case yesterday in this court?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Butler, let me add to your troubles, if I may. As you know, we take state law as construed by the court of the state.
Yes, sir.
We have no other choice. My question is suggested by an earlier question by my brother Powell. In this case, the Supreme Court of Michigan pointed out that the statute itself is silent as to a warrant requirement. Doesn't say one is required, doesn't say one is not required. But it said, as a state court, we are now construing the law, the state law of Michigan, as requiring a warrant. Now, therefore, don't we have before us a state law, as construed by the highest court of your state, that in fact requires a warrant in this situation? And if that's true, is there any federal question before this court?
We contend that they construed it only to meet what they believe to be the requirements of the Fourth Amendment.
They did construe their state law as requiring a warrant in these situations. The statute, and we take the combination of what was enacted by the legislature and the construction of it put on it by the Michigan courts. And the Michigan courts now tell us that the law of the state of Michigan, as a matter of state law, requires a warrant in this situation.
But they're doing it only to do what they believe is necessary to conform to the federal constitutional requirement.
However, maybe they couldn't read. But however they did it, this is what they tell us the state law requires.
We contend that construing a statute to make it meet constitutional requirements is itself a federal question, not a state question. If their construction of the Fourth Amendment's requirements is mistaken, then they would presumably revise their judgment of what Michigan statute requires.
We had the Zucchini case late last term, which I think supports your position, but I'm
not familiar with the case, I'm sorry.
Mr. Butler, supposing the state legislature had expressly drafted a statute requiring a warrant, and the legislative history showed that the legislature only did it because they thought the federal constitution required it. They said, we really don't want this requirement, we think the Supreme Court would impose it on us. Could we ignore that statute because we thought they acted under a misguided interpretation of the federal constitution?
No, we couldn't, Your Honor. They would be bound by that, of course. That would be a state law. Because it was a legislative act rather than a court decision or a court judgment that could be reviewed.
But here you're saying that even though the state Supreme Court is clear in what it tells us the statute means, we should change that because we think they may have acted on an incorrect premise.
We're asking this court to, if it agrees with our position, state that the federal constitution does not require this construction. It does not require a warrant.
If they had placed their decision exclusively on Michigan law, would you be here?
No, we wouldn't, Your Honor.
Under the Kuvda case decided by this court some years ago, whenever we have been in doubt about whether the state court acted on federal or state grounds, we have sent the case back to require the state Supreme Court, or its highest court, to state clearly whether they acted under federal or state law. But here, they did place it on the Fourth Amendment, did they not?
Yes, they did, Your Honor.
And that's why you claim your right to be here.
Yes, it is. Our contention is that there will be no protection afforded by an administrative warrant because it should issue simply on the fact of a fire occurring. There seems to be no need for any exercise of independent judgment, no real individual review by a magistrate.
Well, what's your basis for that?
That if the only question is, did a fire occur?
Is there some established law around that says that you needn't show probable cause to believe a crime has been committed?
I believe the administrative warrant requirement, which the court below imposed, did not have anything to do with whether a crime had occurred. It had simply to do with whether a fire had occurred, and the officials need to re-enter the premises once they left.
But you're talking about what the federal constitution does or doesn't require. What authority is there for saying that under the Fourth Amendment you can investigate an arson by entering property without showing probable cause?
We think Camara stands for the proposition that you can have inspections without showing that necessarily a crime has occurred. You have to show their reasonableness by criteria which really don't apply to a post-disaster investigation. The length of time since a last inspection, has occurred is irrelevant. The only thing that's relevant is the condition of the building.
Kamara and C are your principal cases?
We're contending that they don't require an administrative search warrant, even though the court ruled out they
do. We don't have an investigation. We have a criminal investigation.
We contend we have some kind of mixture of both, Your Honor. But to the extent...
Well, what in the world reason do you have to go in there unless you want to find out whether or not a crime had been committed?
You still want to confirm the cause of the fire. It was done in a very hasty manner in this case. If it is contended...
Hasty manner 3 weeks later?
No, I'm speaking of them leaving at 4 a.m. and being satisfied that they had determined the cause of the fire simply by finding two bottles of gasoline. Ordinarily, that does not seem sufficient.
Well, then after they had all that time to think, they could think up getting a warrant.
It seems the reason they left was simply because there was no more they could do until daylight, until smoke and steam had dissipated, and they were able
and
to
until
visually...
until they could have gotten a warrant. There could have been another reason.
There were 4 hours, and that is the rough time that even an administrative warrant, which requires really no exercise of judgment, would take. So an administrative warrant perhaps could have been obtained had there been the requirement at the time of the search.
Well, even if they had found nothing, even if they hadn't found these two cans of gasoline, might they not have wanted to go back feeling that they had not determined the cause of fire, even though perhaps there was no arson involved?
Yes, I believe they would have gone back to continue their investigation in daylight hours, to do whatever they couldn't do at night while the building was filled with smoke and steam. In addition, they need to check the structural integrity of any building, even before letting the occupants back in.
Well, we're just suggesting, perhaps some of us, that you don't necessarily have a crime involved so far as investigation is concerned. Isn't it the duty of the fire department under your system to find out the cause of a fire, among other things, to prevent its recurrence under similar circumstances? There may be no arson involved.
Yes, it is, Your Honor, to determine the cause of the fire, to determine the extent of the damage, and to check the structural integrity of the building.
It strikes me you have something not dissimilar to an Internal Revenue Service investigation. They initially might be out just to determine that everything has been included, and that will develop into a full-fledged criminal investigation sometimes, depending on what they find.
That's correct, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, if the Court please, I'd ask to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Very well. Mr. Pecalis.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. I think I'd like to begin my remarks by clarifying the factual record a little bit. Allow me to say that the fire occurred at about 11:30 or just before 12 o'clock on January 21st.
At night.
PM. At night.
PM.
And while the fire department was there until 4 a.m., on January 22nd, Lieutenant Lawson of the fire department discovered gasoline on the premises. And he thereupon called the attention to Chief C, S-double-E, who was the fire chief. He came over and found the gasoline. At that point, Chief C then brought in Detective Webb. And he, too, looked at the gasoline. And at that point, they removed the gasoline from the premises and went to the police headquarters and poured the gasoline that they had removed from the premises into another container, which was marked for evidence purposes.
Now, do you say that that was a proper taking of possession of that gasoline?
I have to concede that the fire department had a right to be there to put out the fire, and whatever they found in the course of being there present for that occasion, they had a right to seize it. That much
They certainly didn't have a right to permanently take whatever they found there, did they?
No, but they have a right to at least identify it as being a cause for determining what the cause and origin of the fire was.
Well,
which
if
is
for
what
no other reason, they would remove the gasoline if they thought it was gasoline so that the fire might not reignite between 4 in the morning and daylight, I suppose, would they not?
I can only tell the court what they did.
Well, does that or does it not make sense? We're dealing with a clause that has the word reasonable in it. unreasonable, as a matter of fact.
I think we have to deal with the explosive nature and the danger of gasoline being present in the premises just because it vaporizes. Yeah. From that context, there is a danger present just because gasoline is vaporizing. I would have to concede, yes, there is a danger present. Whether that is the motive that prompted the police officer and the fireman to move the gasoline from the premises, I cannot say. All I can tell you is what they did. My own private opinion is they were gathering evidence because, as they indicate under cross-examination, they admitted that at that point in time, before they left the premises at 4 a.m., they had determined the cause and origin of the fire and that the gasoline was the cause and the origin of the fire.
You said they. Who is they?
The persons I've identified. Chief C, S-double-E, who is the fire chief, and Detective Webb.
Is he an expert in cause of fire?
In my opinion, he is not an expert, but I'm telling you what he determined.
You said they determined.
But
how can they determine if they're not experts?
Well, if Your Honor, please, the general practice is in fire extinguishment that somebody makes a determination of cause and origin. That's usually done by the fire department personnel. Now, whether or not they are experts and qualified to make that judgment...
Well, the answer is, if they determined it, why did they have other investigation? They had other investigations because they hadn't determined it.
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor. My personal opinion is that they, once they determined that gasoline was involved...
Well, do they have a marshal there that is solely responsible for determining fires, the cause of fire?
In the state, we do. We have a state fire marshal.
Well, that's his responsibility. Now, I don't see how a chief of police or a chief of fire department, anybody else, can take over his responsibility. That's my problem.
Well, I can't vouch for why they did it, Your Honor.
Why don't you say that they said that that was the cause?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, no, you said they found that they found you.
Well, they testified that they had determined
that
to be
it. Fine.
They testified that they determined that gasoline...
They testified that in their opinion.
That's right. That's correct. Now...
They would be required, certainly, to take away any incendiary material. Suppose there were a couple of cases of bourbon or a couple of cases of shotgun shells. Would it make any sense for them to leave them in a fire that had not been totally and fully extinguished?
In the state of Michigan, the only one who removes liquor from the premises is the department who administers alcohol licensing, the Michigan Liquor Control Commission. The liquor is destroyed under their direction.
Well, I'm not talking about destroying it.
I'm talking about removing it.
So it won't make a fire.
But I'm talking about removing it also, because that's what Your Honor asked.
Wouldn't the fire marshal, wouldn't the fire department have the authority to remove inflammable material that might reignite the fire?
I think one could well hypothecate he has a duty to protect further danger from developing, yes.
Well, he wouldn't be thought to have much sense if he didn't remove it, would he?
Well, I can't vouch for that, Your Honor, because all I can tell you is what they generally do. And in Michigan, they do generally not remove alcohol. Now, if Your Honor, please, the important thing about the factual situation here is that after this conversation and identification of exhibits at police headquarters, the fire department personnel withdrew from the fire scene, leaving the premises unguarded and unlocked for 4 hours. Now, sometime later that day, January 22nd, I cannot tell you because the record does not show at what time of day the premises were locked by the fire department, but they were locked and they were boarded up, and there's ample photographs in the record to show you exactly what that building looked like in its boarded up condition, and they were secured from outsiders coming in. It was done by Lieutenant Somerville of the fire department.
I'm just interested in what your view of the record might be. Perhaps it isn't an issue here, but suppose the fire department or the investigators had gone to a magistrate and said, we want authority to search the building. They went there the morning immediately after the fire and said, "And here's what we found, and here's what we want. We want authority to search. We want authority to board up the building to avoid any destruction of evidence.
Would there have been ample basis for a warrant to issue?
For
a
warrant?
In your view?
For an administrative warrant?
No, for a judicial warrant.
For a judicial warrant. I, from my own personal experience, anytime you have gasoline present at a fire scene,
yes,
suspected of being the accelerant, I believe that provides a reasonable cause to go in and search.
So if they had gone to the magistrate, you think a warrant could have issued for further searching the premises?
I believe that under that state of facts, that a reasonable magistrate would have authorized a warrant.
What if they hadn't found any gasoline, but simply felt that their investigation was incomplete because of the smoky conditions and so forth? What is your contention that a magistrate would have had to find if they'd gone before him the next morning and asked for leave to continue the investigation?
I believe that the fact that the fire personnel cannot determine the cause and origin of the fire would be a legitimate basis for granting an administrative warrant to enter the premises to determine with exactitude what the cause and origin is, if it's possible to be done.
Well, what if the magistrate were to conclude that diligent fire personnel could have concluded it at 4 in the morning? Would he be permitted under the federal constitution to turn down a warrant at that point on that basis?
Assuming the standard which you have given me to be factual, then I would have to say that there would be no necessity.
And only necessity would warrant the issuance of the type of administrative warrant we've been discussing?
I believe so, because I think that's the only reason it exists. I mean, the fire department is charged with a responsibility to keep track of the cause of the fire. If they're unable to do that in a particular situation and the owner won't give them consent to enter the premises, then I believe it provides a legitimate basis to ask for an administrative search warrant. And it doesn't impose a serious hardship or difficulty upon the fire department. It does provide an additional safeguard in that a magistrate now sits between the fire department and or the police department in their search for the cause and origin of the fire.
What do you call an administrative warrant if you're talking about a magistrate? That's a judicial warrant, isn't it? It's not just a warrant issued by the executive branch or the administrative branch.
Well, perhaps the court is not aware that Michigan, in the same act which was cited in the briefs and petitions to justify the fire marshals entering the premises, also has another section right following it which gives the fire marshal the right to investigate crime if he thinks one is present. And part of that statute grants immunity if the witness is called to produce and give testimony against himself. And the procedure is there, and it's in the Fire Act, to safeguard the right of the person who is being called upon to produce evidence to explain the cause and origin of the fire.
Well, this gentleman was away for a week or 8 days, was he not?
Yes, he was, Your Honor.
Well, should they then stop all their inquiry into the fire cause until he got back?
No, I think they had ample grounds and basis in this record to go to a magistrate and ask for a warrant for a criminal investigation. Not just an administrative, but a criminal, because they found gasoline.
What if at that time they did not think in terms of a criminal investigation? A lot of people leave gasoline in cans lying around.
Well, I think the record will reflect the opposite, Your Honor, because Chief C. and Detective Webb both indicated in cross-examination, in their opinion, at that point in time, they suspected foul play, and they believed that arson had been committed.
So that you are saying as soon as they begin to have suspicions, then they must get a judicial warrant?
Well, I'm saying that as soon as there's a reasonable basis for those suspicions, yes. Not just the mere fact that they have private suspicion, but the fact that they have to go to a magistrate and lay those suspicions out and what they consist of. And if there's a reasonable basis for them, and if that reasonable basis is the presence of gasoline, I say the magistrate should issue a warrant.
The Supreme Court of Michigan, I take it, in construing the act that you referred to and the administrative warrant provision that I understood you to say was contained in it, held that was inadequate under the federal constitution. Is that correct?
No, I don't believe the Supreme Court of Michigan reviewed the Fire Marshals Act to determine whether or not it was adequate. All they have determined is that in this particular instance, the search and seizure in this case was unreasonable. and in violation of the statute, I mean of the constitutional rights.
But didn't they say the statute didn't speak to this point?
Oh, yes. In terms of requiring a warrant, that's correct, Your Honor. They make that comment in their opinion.
Mr. McCullis, I have one problem perhaps you can help me with. The key to the premises was retained by the public authorities, either the fire marshal or the police department.
That's correct.
Did the owner of the premises or the tenant have access at all?
Well, if you look at the
last... Did he demand access at all? It's kind of a strange privacy interest where he couldn't get his own...
It
his
is.
Own
and the last page of our appendix indicates the owner's statements. He couldn't get a thing out of that building. The fire department had, in effect, seized it and sealed it off.
Well, did he ask for it?
Sir?
Did he ask to get in?
No.
Is there anything in this record that will convince any of us that he hadn't abandoned that building?
There is no indication in the record that he did abandon the building. None whatsoever.
No, that wasn't my question.
Sir?
Was there any evidence in the record that he had not abandoned the building? He locked up the building and went overseas.
That's right.
And what did he do toward getting back in the building after that? Nothing.
The record reflects that he went to the building and that there was various points in time when anyone may enter the building because vandals would frequently pull apart the boards which boarded up the windows and freely enter the building. And in this manner, he had entered the building himself, I'm sure. The record does not reflect that he did enter.
If you please, I want the record on this. Is there anything in the record to show that he tried to get in the building?
The record will reflect that...
And the next question is going to be, is there anything he did to keep anybody out of the building?
The only things that he did to keep people out of the building is the statements of what he did prior to the fire occurring.
They're talking about after the fire occurred.
The record does not contain any evidence as to what he did to protect the building from invasion by anyone after the building. That's right. There's absolutely no disclosure in the record as to that.
He didn't even put up a sign to say private property.
No, sir. Not in this record.
Did he make any effort to remove the contents of the building, like the furniture that hadn't been sold? Presumably something wasn't damaged. I don't know.
Well, so far as the furniture and the contents that were in the building were concerned, they were fairly well destroyed.
They were, I see.
The things which were not destroyed, of course, were the business records. And there is evidence in the records that the fire department and or the police department, I guess it was the state police, state fire marshal's division, took a box of records, business records, to the fingerprint laboratory for purposes of having fingerprints taken off.
It seems to me it's a kind of a strange privacy interest where an owner doesn't even ask to get his records back or anything back and let somebody else have the key to the place for about a month.
The record would reflect that Sergeant Hoffman, who is from the state fire marshal's office, told my client, Mr. Tyler, he was not to remove anything from the building. That's in the record. In fact, when they went there together on January 29th, there's a discussion between them, and it's on the record to that effect.
Was there any statutory authority for a public official taking possession of premises like these?
Not in my opinion.
Well, did you make any move in any court to get possession of the building?
Well, like I said, Your Honor...
That's a very simple answer.
No, we did not go into court because we did not need to.
Well, he didn't have possession.
No, Your Honor, please. What happened was the police and firemen locked up the building, but vandals kept breaking it open. Anyone could and did, if they wanted, go into that building.
Well, was your client denied access to the building?
He was denied the right to remove evidence from the building, according to Sergeant Hoffman.
Did you do anything to get him access to the building?
I don't think I represented him at that time, Your Honor.
Well, did anybody do anything to get him access to the building?
Not according to the record.
Well, how can you tell me he hadn't abandoned it?
Because he was still paying rent on the building, Your Honor. And that's in the record. Not only was he paying rent on the building, he had his records. What was remaining of his business records in the file. And Sergeant Hoffman told him he was not to take those from the building because he wanted to preserve them as evidence. My client, not knowing any better, yielded to his direction and order. Now, I did not go to court and ask for an order to receive those records.
Well, you said you didn't represent them.
I know. I understand that. nor did anyone else, according to the record. The thing that intrigues me about this case is the fact that the state Supreme Court has justifiably concluded from the testimony of the participants that this was, in fact, a criminal investigation from the early morning hours of January 22nd, beginning with Chief C's declaration as to what the cause and origin was. And I think that's significant when you view what was done here by the authorities as the government's representatives in literally sealing off this building and keeping the occupant from his records, that in effect we have not only a specific seizure, but we have a total seizure of both business records and the so-called tools of the crime. Now, unfortunately, my brother's want to bootstrap the jury determination that there was an arson committed by my clients to say that because of such a determination, they have no expectation of privacy, which this court or the Constitution of Michigan or of the United States protects. And that, to me, is nothing more than saying that the end justifies the means. And I just cannot accept that kind of reasoning to say that there cannot be any expectation of privacy simply because there has been a determination that an arson has been committed. It also runs up against the presumption of innocence. When this representative of the government is seeking evidence, if he forms an opinion, whether it be reasonable or not, that the occupant has been guilty of the crime of arson, that should not by itself extinguish any expectation of privacy, nor should it give the government the right to intrude, as it did in this case, totally by sealing off the premises, particularly under circumstances where we have the department, both the fire department and the police department, involved.
Does the sealing off of the premises add anything more to your argument that wouldn't be present if the fire department had simply come in at these additional dates and taken the additional evidence?
Only to the extent of the scope of the invasion, Your Honor, because I think they took more than they needed to take in terms of a reasonable search if they had a warrant in the first place. I mean, let's assume they had a warrant to search for criminal cause in the first place. I don't believe that would give them the right to take possession of the entire premises.
Well, you may well be right, but I get the impression from the record that your client wasn't overly concerned.
Well, unfortunately, we did not develop that in evidence. That's correct. There is nothing in the record to indicate one way or the other how my client felt about it.
Did he? Well, is it likely that he would have wanted a lot of cardboard furniture returned, do you think?
Well, I don't know about the cardboard furniture, but I do know about his business records. I'm sure that one would have a hard time convincing this court that he would want his cardboard deposits in the fire scene to be returned. But of more significance are his private records, his business records. Because now we're talking about possible Fifth Amendment implications.
Does the record indicate any condition of inherent dangerousness after the fire in the structure?
There is absolutely nothing in the record to indicate there was any inherent danger present after the fire department left the scene.
Would you say that the fire department or that some public authority had an obligation to try to seal that building and lock it and protect it from vandalism until the owner could take over that responsibility himself?
No, I did not say that, Your Honor.
No, I say, would you say so?
No, I do not think so.
You think they should just walk away and leave the doors open?
I can guarantee you, Your Honor, they do it every day in Michigan. Every day.
Mr. Bacalus, your emphasis on the business records, I can't recall, were they admitted into evidence or not?
No, Your Honor. But they were seized.
but they're not really before us.
No, I only offer that as an extent of the scope of the intrusion here.
But isn't the constitutional question that we're supposed to decide here precisely the same as if there had never been any business record in the place at all?
Well, that part is true, Your Honor. But I think in looking at what took place, I thought it would be helpful to the court to understand the scope of the invasion by the governmental authority.
But for all we know, on this record, they may have returned those papers and records to him as soon as he came and claimed them.
There's nothing in the record one way or the other, Your Honor.
Well, suppose, Mr. McAllister, that there had been no gasoline found in the course of putting out the fire. No evidence of the cause at that time, but the fire department has a duty to determine cause, whether there's a crime suspected or not. So the fire department does or doesn't the next day get in a so-called administrative warrant. But nevertheless, it comes back either with or without a warrant and looks around the property. It determines cause right there on the spot, and it determines it from the fact that it finds some unimpeachable evidence that there was arson, and it finds the cause, and it takes it away. Is that admissible in evidence?
I do not believe it is, Your Honor.
So that you think that without a warrant, without a probable cause warrant issued by a magistrate, the public authorities are entitled to determine cause, but if they find evidence of a crime, they can't admit it. They can't introduce it unless they have a warrant.
Not unless they obtain that evidence through the means of a warrant. That's correct, Your Honor.
What if instead of taking something, they merely took photographs of objective factors that would be evidence in support of arson? Would those photographs be admissible without a warrant?
I believe that they would be improper, Your Honor, because they represent a search. They don't represent a seizure, but at least they represent a search. The photograph is the next best substitute for giving a visual presentation to the trier.
All right. Suppose instead of taking pictures, the fire marshal's man who makes these investigations to determine cause of fire merely looks at them, sees them, makes notes, and remembers them, and then they tender him as a witness. Would you say his testimony is excludable?
I would think so, Your Honor, on the theory of the search being just what it is, a search. And without a warrant, I don't want to appear to not acknowledge that when the fire department is there for the purpose of putting out the fire, they have every right in the world to look and see what's there to be seen.
And if they see some evidence of what caused the fire, even though it might indicate a crime, they can take it.
At the time they're there for putting out the fire, yes,
all you're
Your
saying
Honor.
Is if they're legally on the premises, they can seize evidence of a crime that's in plain sight.
That's right. And that's
well,
why.
What about the next day if they're legally on the premises and
if
they find some evidence?
If they are legally on the premises, mm-hmm. and I assume by that, Your Honor, means they have obtained a warrant.
Let's assume that suppose they have no evidence the night before that there's been any crime committed, but they must determine cause. Now, you're not suggesting they need to show probable cause of some crime before they can go back on the premises to determine cause. They can at least get an administrative warrant and go back in.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, suppose they get the administrative warrant, as you call it, whatever that is, and they're legally on the premises. You would agree they're legally on the premises?
Yes, under those circumstances.
Well, and then they find some evidence.
Well, I think then that's part of being on the premises and the lawful function.
Legally, so they could then introduce the evidence that they legally find.
Yes, sir, I believe so.
Who issues this administrative warrant that you speak of under Michigan law? And how do you distinguish an administrative warrant from a judicial warrant, a traditional warrant?
Well, unfortunately, there is nothing spelled out in the statute in reference to a procedure as to what magistrate you go before to obtain the warrant in an administrative area.
Well, is there, in Michigan law, any such thing as an administrative warrant? That would be a creature of statute, would it not?
I think the whole phraseology has come out of the Camera C decisions in terms of recognizing a differentiation between an administrative search of the premises and a criminal search. And from that distinction has now emerged the new language, administrative warrant. Unfortunately, so far as I know, there is no legislative pronouncements as to how that's to be implemented, nor at this point are there any judicial decisions that spell out how it should be done.
Maybe all this court had in mind in that conversation in the opinion was that states could enact legislation creating an administrative warrant procedure. But if you don't have a statute of Michigan authorizing an administrative warrant, then I wonder why any discussion of an administrative warrant is relevant here.
We do have a statute, which has been alluded to already, Your Honor, which allows the fire marshal, if he suspects a crime, a procedure of testimony and subpoena by which he can require people to bring in records and evidence. And part of that statute also grants immunity to anybody who brings in such evidence. Now, that doesn't answer your question, but that is the only thing that I know of in Michigan law at this time that comes close to answering your question.
Mr. McCullough,
what did you want in this case before the second day when they went in? Where should they have gone and what should they have gotten?
In my opinion, after they found gasoline, they had reasonable cause. If they wanted to pinpoint, as they appeared to do, if they wanted to pinpoint with exact accuracy how the gasoline got triggered to cause the fire, then all they had to do was go to the local circuit court and ask for a criminal search warrant in the usual manner.
Do you want a judicial search warrant?
That's right, Your Honor.
Mr. McCullough,
yes,
let me make Justice White's factual assumptions a little stickier, because I'm concerned about what they found the very next morning when daylight came. Assume that they found something that was not visible at night but was visible in the daytime, and further assume that instead of leaving at 4 a.m., the fire department just stayed there until the sun came up, and then they picked it up. Admissible in evidence or not?
I think I'd have to agree with you that it is admissible in evidence, because the fire personnel, from your description, are still on the premises in this function of putting out the fire and determining the cause.
But the fire was out at 4 a.m., and they're just waiting now for the sun to rise so they can see a little more. And then it would be admissible. The fact they went home and came back makes it inadmissible.
Well, not only the fact that they went home, Your Honor, the fact that they went home and left the premises unguarded for 4 hours. That, I think, is significant, because that, to me, indicates an abandonment. They were through. Now, had they wished to do what Your Honor is suggesting and kept fire department personnel there, and they do that, Your Honor, they do seal off premises for 24 and 48 hours. It's not unusual in Michigan. But in this case, they didn't. They went home for 4 hours.
The shift didn't change.
I cannot answer that, Your Honor. I can only tell you what the facts are in the record. That concludes my remarks, unless you have some more questions.
Do you have anything further, Mr. Butler?
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, a number of questions were asked about what an administrative search warrant is in Michigan. And there it's clear that an administrative search warrant is issued by a judge. It's just issued for a different purpose, for an administrative search rather than for a criminal investigation. And according to the opinion of the Court below, there's a varying standard of probable cause under Kamara. That's the lower court's understanding, and that is the practice in Michigan. There's no one else to issue an administrative search warrant but a judge.
Has it ever been issued in connection with a fire situation, to your knowledge?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor, so far.
Mr. Butler, under your view of the case, who had possession of the premises on February 16th?
On February 16th, the premises were sitting in exactly the condition they had been sitting in ever since the fire. As far as we know, Respondent Tyler had been back there only once, at least until his return. I think the fire and police officials were responsible more as custodians or caretakers for the building.
Under your view of the fact situation, who had possession of the premises on February 16th?
Respondent Tyler on February 16th.
But he didn't have the key. I mean, not as involved in this case. Wouldn't it have been better at some time to have said, look, here's the key to your building. We're through with it.
Okay, Tyler did not own the building. He leased it. He had absolutely nothing of value left in there. The evidence indicates...
But he was still paying rent, according to...
We believe the records indicate that he did not pay his rent, according to the landlord. He didn't pay it. There is one reference, and I don't have the cite to the record because I didn't know it would be regarded as important, that he may have paid and the check did not clear the bank, something to that effect. But the cinder block shell of the building was intact. The inside, with the exception of the northeast and northwest corners, were totally destroyed, and there was, as best we can tell, nothing of value.
Mr. Butler, until the decision of this case by the Michigan Supreme Court, what do you consider the law of Michigan to have been on this subject?
There's a case from the 1920s which held merely the obvious, that firemen who went in were allowed to seize whatever they could find while they were putting out the fire. Since that time and before this case, there were four Court of Appeals cases, three of them upheld a warrantless search for the cause or origin of a fire.
Upheld?
The validity of a warrantless search for the cause or origin of a fire.
Required a warrant.
Pardon?
Required a warrant.
Did not require a warrant.
Did not require.
Thank you.
And what did the fourth case hold?
The fourth case was written, or at least was joined in by one of the justices who wrote the opinion that's under review now when he was on the Court of Appeals, and it held that an administrative search warrant was required. That holding was expressly rejected by two later panels of the Court of Appeals and was never joined in by anyone other than that one panel.
What was that, the Dejanowicz case?
Yes, Your Honor.
And in Michigan, your courts of appeals are relatively recent, dating back only to your new constitution.
Or 65, excuse me.
65. Your courts of appeals have territorial jurisdiction, don't they?
They are elected from territorial districts. Their jurisdiction, then, is... It's a complete
statewide.
Mixture, statewide.
So that it's not like the federal system where there could be a conflict between...
Not at all. We do have conflicts that arise, but they simply apply to the
but
same
statewide.
Place.
Statewide.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I understand you to say that the Dejanowicz case was subsequently overruled by two other decisions of the Court of Appeals?
They don't really overrule...
But two panels...
Two panels expressly considered it, found it not persuasive and refused to follow.
So that at the time of this fire, the authorities in Michigan, operating under decisions of your appellate court, had the authority to do what they did?
Yes, they did, Your Honor. This was a pre-Dejanowicz fire and trial.
No, the Dejanowicz case was in 1972.
Yes, Your Honor. This fire occurred in 1970, and the trial occurred in 1971. So this search occurred prior to Dejanowicz.
So they were acting in accordance with their understanding of the law at the time.
Yes, Your Honor.
Was the Court of Appeals decisions that you referred to, was the Dejanowicz case not the most recent? Huh?
That is not the most recent. Following Dejanowicz is a case called People Against Kulick, K-U-L-I-C-K, and also this decision, People Against Tyler, below.
Who wrote the Dejanowicz opinion, though?
I'm not sure, Your Honor.
Oh, okay.
Who is now Justice Levin was a judge in that panel. I don't believe he wrote it.
But even under the Dejanowicz case, the 9 o'clock search, the second search, would have been perfectly valid. As I read that case, that said that at the time of the fire or promptly thereafter, there was authority to search without a warrant.
It did. The question is, does that mean that if they continue a search while there are exigent circumstances, the exigent circumstances dissipate and they continue the search, maybe that would have been upheld. Whether Dejanowicz would have allowed a reentry, we doubt.
Now, these Court of Appeals opinions that you have been discussing, were they placed on the Fourth Amendment of the Federal Constitution or on the State Constitution of Michigan?
The Fourth Amendment, primarily. One or two of them does mention, I mean, as state cases frequently do, that this case raises a question under the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution as well as Article 1, Section 11 of the State Constitution, and then proceed to discuss nothing but federal cases. That's a frequent happening in state appellate court. Thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear argument.